I'm getting my money the fastest. Memos and faxes, shredded up documents. Slush funds through the corrupt continents. But they don't want me indicted, cause they don't want my dirty laundry aired when I fight it. Don't get my lawyers excited, cause what good is a law if you can't rewrite it? I got CIA traitors, dictators, so f*** y'all whistleblowers and haters. I am the 1%. Yacht in the ocean, coasting with the sails out. Hey America, thanks for the bailouts. I made off at the Banco Ambrosiano. Got away scot-free like El Vaticano. Activists get...
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Martin Smith, the producer and correspondent of the just-broadcast PBS Frontline special, The Untouchables. In his 28 years producing for Frontline, Martin Smith has covered the world from revolutions in Central America and the fall of communism in Russia to the rise of Al-Qaeda, the war in Iraq, and Wall Street. Smith produced the award-winning trilogy for Frontline, In Search of Al-Qaeda, Return of the Taliban, and Obama's War. Smith also made several business films for Frontline, including Heat, about business and climate change, The Madoff Affair, and the landmark economy miniseries Money, Power, and Wall Street. Welcome to Background Briefing, Martin Smith.
Ian, thank you very much for having me.
And your special, The Untouchables, appears to have had some effect. I'm not sure of the cause and effect here, but Lenny Brewer, who does not come across well in your film, the Assistant Attorney General in charge of prosecuting Wall Street crimes, he hasn't announced his retirement, but the rumor is he's heading for the door.
Mm-hmm. Let me say, first of all, the reaction to the program has been immense. It's clearly struck a nerve, and a lot of people are ready to make causation out of coincidence. I can't say that I know why he's retiring at this time, but it has been known for some time that he was going to leave Justice. He's been a long-serving chief of the criminal division there, and even when I interviewed him, I brought the subject up, and he was a bit coy about it, but there was every indication that he would be going back into the private sector. But it really seems that if it's coincidence, which I tend to want to believe it is, it's simply a very awkward and mismanaged coincidence. When the interview was done, there was some tension in the interview, of course, because I was doing my job and he was doing his, and we sat on facing each other, and when it was done, I don't think anybody that was there would have thought that it was an easy go of it. So they knew the program was coming out, and in fact, we invited their comments. And why he chose, or why the Washington Post, perhaps the Washington Post simply wanted to run some old rumors that had been circulating, and for the hell of it, time it to coincide with the program. But they didn't mention the program. So I really, I don't really like to get into speculation. I like to deal in the realm of facts, but that's what I know.
Well, but when you say that you were doing your job and he was doing his job, it strikes me as that's an ironic comment, given that the whole thrust of your PBS special that was broadcast on Tuesday, The Untouchables, was that Lenny Brewer hasn't been doing his job and that nobody has been prosecuted.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That nobody's been prosecuted. I mean, that one hopes that you have revived the outrage that's out there about this extraordinary fact that virtually the people who brought the entire global economy to a near-death experience and essentially created this recession and were bailed out by trillions of dollars of essentially wasted money have in fact prospered while the rest of the country has languished.
That's right. Well, what I meant was at that moment he was doing his job in that he was doing his best to answer the questions that I asked him. Clearly, the thrust of the program, as you say, was what was the Justice Department doing for the last 4 years, and have they really made a sufficient effort to prosecute those that whose activities led to the crisis? So you make a good point there.
So is there a further coincidence that today the president nominated former federal prosecutor Mary Jo White to lead up the Securities and Exchange Commission? Can you take credit for that?
I don't want to be in the position of gloating and taking credit for anything that I don't when I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We're still reporting this and trying to discover what we can about why the events of the last couple of days are unfolding as they are. But as far as I know, I do know that from one source that Brewer announced last week that he was going to have a party at his home and make some, I don't know if what he said about the party, but it's not, we're not in the holidays, and one could speculate there, and again, it's a speculation that he was going to be announcing something, and I don't know when that party took place or if it hasn't yet, and, you know, that's as much as we know at this point in time.
Well, the president, in announcing his nomination of former federal prosecutor Mary Jo White to lead up the Securities and Exchange Commission, did talk about the need to protect investors on Wall Street from the kind of reckless and profligate behavior that led to the crash and led to the recession and led to the bailout. And I just wonder, given that it's taken so long, one of the great questions out there from in the first Obama term is, why didn't the president make an issue out of what had just happened to the country? And in a paradoxical way, it was the Tea Party, this sort of faux right-wing populist group that seized on the bailout and on Wall Street's crash. And that was the genesis of that. And that would have been an issue that one would have thought that the left could have picked up and used, and the Democrats, but they didn't. So is that always, that's always puzzled me.
Sure. But we have short memories, all of us. The president gave mixed messages in 2009 when he came to office. He had the bankers, he had the 13 bankers meeting at the White House where bankers came fearful that he was going to crack down on them. And then he more or less told them that he stood between them and the pitchforks and that he wanted to work with them and move forward and not look back. Not too many weeks after that, he signed the Fraud Enforcement and Recovery Act, which would strengthen America's fraud statutes and make it easier for prosecutors to go after the bank. So there was a mixed message there. Perhaps you're trying to save the economy by saving the banks. At the same time, it's reasonable that you could be trying to prosecute and create deterrence for future bad behavior. Then in later that year, the Justice Department announced it was going to have a task force to look into mortgage fraud that Holder announced. And then again, perhaps in reaction to both Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street demonstrations and the fact that it was an election year, in January of 2012, in the President's State of the Union address, he announced the formation of a new working group to look specifically at mortgage securitization fraud. So putting Mary Jo White in charge is a move that I think a lot of people will applaud. But there have been other announcements, formations of task forces, working groups. You know, it seems to roll on. We're still waiting to see if real prosecutions result from it.
Again, I'm speaking with Martin Smith, the producer and correspondent for the Just Broadcast PBS Frontline special, The Untouchables. He's also made a number of Frontline specials on Wall Street and the business community, including Heat about business and climate change, The Madoff Affair, and the landmark economy miniseries, Money, Power, and Wall Street. But your film, though, I mean, the reason that Lenny Brewer, we're talking about him, is that he's so much a part of your film because he's the man in charge of bringing forth prosecutions, and he did not equip himself well. I think that's putting it politely. And to this moment, I still don't understand this peculiar torpor within the Justice Department. Why all of these excuses but no action? It's mystifying. And I imagine, and I know you were trying to get to the bottom of it. Is this still a mystery?
Well, I think that there was a preference for prosecuting cases that they had more certainty they were going to win. it's the equivalent of swinging only at very slow pitches. The harder cases, I think everybody would agree that the transactions that took place, the securitization, the mortgage-backed securities, the CDO market, these were well-lawyered transactions. On the other hand, there's clear evidence that the banks knowingly and intentionally defrauded the investors. Many of those investors are Main Street through the pension funds that invested in these instruments. So it is somewhat of a mystery, but as Brewer told me, it's hard. That was the excuse he gave for why the Justice Department has not pursued these. We know that after the Bear Stearns hedge fund managers case in 2009, that was a case that was started under the Bush administration, the Justice Department lost. And I think that that may have had an effect, although Brewer says it didn't. There's one clue in that when I asked him about a speech he made before the New York City Bar Association, where he said that he lost sleep at night worrying about the consequences of indicting a bank as a financial institution, and what the consequences would be if the bank then went out of business, people lost their jobs, and there were ripple effects throughout the economy. Well, I don't think that's the job of a prosecutor. I think a lot of people would agree that the prosecutor has to pursue justice and let others worry about the consequences and not be tempered by politics or other concerns. So that shows a kind of reticence that gave us a clue into the way he thinks about these things.
Well, of course, Martin Smith, the fact that it's so difficult to understand how the untouchables got away with it when there is such manifest paper trails. Your Frontline special makes it clear that all of this stuff is on paper, all these mortgages, and you saw boxes and boxes of them. So there's this absolutely overwhelming paper trail. And the fact that so many people in these big banks and people like John Paulson and others were taking short positions with the inside knowledge, or the knowledge, shall we say, that this whole thing was going to collapse, isn't that in itself evidence?
Yes, it's mind-boggling. But, of course, you know, it's not illegal for me to sell you a bunch of crap if I tell you basically in the fine print that what I'm selling you is a bunch of crap. And there were also a lot of these arrangements whereby the buyer really didn't have visibility into the quality of these things. And so you've had a long process of discovery to ferret out just what was being sold. In the case of the insurers who insured the quality of these loan packages, they're the first to really have visibility into what was going on in these packages. And when you read those contracts, the language is pretty clear that it says that some of these loans may be defective or may not meet our standards. But, of course, some of these does not cover defect rates upwards of 50, 60, 70%. And that's where the banks are in trouble. That's where the banks have been facing a lot of civil lawsuits, and where the New York Attorney General is now acting. The U.S. Attorney in New York, Preet Bharara, is also acting on this front, and the FHFA. These are all civil suits. It's still a mystery why that evidence, if it's so damning and the banks have been forced to pay settlements in the billions of dollars, why in all of that mess there has not been one single banker held criminally liable for misrepresentations.
Well, in the film, in your film, Martin Smith, The Untouchables, the PBS Frontline special broadcast this week, and presumably will be broadcast again, and I believe it's available online at what's the website, Frontline?
Frontline.org.
So you have a whistleblower in there from Citicorp who early in, before the meltdown, had sent memos up to the top people, including former Secretary of the Treasury, Robert Rubin. and they were ignored. And then you show a clip of Rubin's testimony when he was challenged by Senator Levin about the fact that he got these memos, and he claimed he didn't see them, and he wasn't very convincing. So I guess the question is, why was he not concerned about the bubble bursting? Because they were taken down. Did he know that the taxpayer was going to bail them out? I mean, help me out here.
Well, what he knew, I can't tell you what he knew. Citicorp also says, and Rubin says, that actions were taken. However, in 2012, Citibank had to admit wrongdoing for failing to do due diligence when another vice president named Sherry Hunt came forward with making the same claims. In fact, she worked with Bowen, making the same claims. And the bank paid 150-some million dollars in penalties for that. And that's not a lot of money, but it was a big settlement for the bank at the time when compared to others. And the fact is they admitted that they had failed to do adequate due diligence. It's, I mean, again, that only adds to the frustration that everyone feels that if that's the case, if they failed to do due diligence and they were being warned since 2006, a la Bowen, why more wasn't done to revise their internal controls. And why, given Sarbanes-Oxley legislation that's in place that demands that the bank have good internal controls in place, why no one was held accountable?
Well, this, I think actually it's more serious now than it was then, in a sense, isn't it, Martin Smith, that we don't have the money to bail them out the next time. This cost something upwards of $21 trillion. It's one of the figures that I'd heard. So we simply don't have that. And now you have, of course, this focus on deficits and the sky is falling and these arguments over austerity going on in Washington. So you would think that there would be a real impetus here to prevent this from happening again. And my understanding is they're too bigger to fail. They're not just too big to fail. They're too bigger to fail now. And there is no systemic early warning system.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's what I don't think that prosecution of past crimes is. I mean, that should deter future bad behavior. But even more important in the instance, in what you're talking about would be capital levels be raised and other more aggressive regulation be put in place. And that's, of course, what Dodd-Frank intends to put in place, and there's a great battle still going on between the bank lobby and legislators and the regulatory agencies over just how that's going to work out. But you're right, we're in a more fragile position than we were 4 or 5 years ago.
So in the absence of clarity, and your documentary, Martin Smith's The Untouchables on Frontline, has given us as much clarity that anybody has. And prior to you, Charles Ferguson, in fact, he made a call at the Academy Awards and pointed out that nobody had gone to jail. To the conspiratorial mind, you're left thinking, well, somebody must have put the fix in here. It couldn't have just been Lanny Brewer, because if it's true that he's blocking up the works or whatever the right analogy is, maybe he's taking orders from somebody. It's very troubling to try and get to the bottom of it if it's not just human error, if there's other mendacious explanations. Is that, I know you deal in facts, not in conspiracy, but I
try to, but you have to know where to sniff things out, I suppose. And I, you know, you're raising good issue, you know, points that we discussed at great length in the making of the documentary and the reporting we did. And certainly we heard lots of stories. Some of them didn't check out, people making claims of calls from the White House to the Justice Department and whatnot. But a lot of it was not substantial. On the other hand, there was clearly a message being given late 2008 into 2009 when the Bush administration began the process of the bailouts, and that was continued into the Obama administration and the stimulus money and whatnot, there was an atmosphere of going forward, not backwards. I think at one point Geithner had said that he didn't believe in Old Testament justice. And of course, as I mentioned earlier in this conversation, the president met with bankers and essentially reassured them that he was going to be on the on their side. If they would cooperate with him, he would help them out. So all of that goes to an atmosphere where prosecutors may not be getting all the political support they would like. And that by that I mean U.S. attorneys around the country and prosecutors working at lower levels than Lanny Breuer in the Justice Department. But again, that's speculation. Certainly individual prosecutors, I don't think they're sitting there trying to make nice for banks so they can get cushy jobs. I hear that all the time. I think, in fact, it would be a great notch in your belt to be able to bring down a banker if you're a prosecutor in the Justice Department. The real question is, they're operating in a political atmosphere. What kind of support did they have? Were they able to get greenlit? And you get some clue in the documentary from Kevin Perkins at the FBI, Financial Crimes Division, where he says that he argued with Lanny Breuer and was frustrated by the lack of a prosecution going forward. So you get some sense from him that it wasn't always his choice to put on the brakes.
Well, just in closing, obviously, a lot of people are happy to see Lanny Breuer go, not the least among them the House Oversight Committee Chairman Darrell Issa, who conducted the fast and furious and somewhat bogus investigation that he did compared to the real crimes that took place on Wall Street that have gone unpunished. What is your sense of, is there any contrition in Wall Street? Is there any understanding of what they've done and how much the Main Street has bailed them out and how they've flourished and Main Street is languishing?
That's a good question. And I first of all, I don't think all bankers on Wall Street were committing criminal fraud. I think, though, when you put so much bonus money on the table, that's an incentive to cheat. I don't think there's any question about that. I don't know. I can't make a general statement about whether Wall Street feels contrition. I think that there are individuals who have expressed that to me, certainly. But, you know, where there's a lot of money, there's going to be greed, and where there's greed, there's going to be crime.
Without punishment, apparently.
It looks that way, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Martin Smith. And
well,
congratulations on your film. It was very, very powerful, very effective.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Martin Smith, who's the producer and correspondent of the just-produced PBS Frontline special, The Untouchables. In his 28 years producing for Frontline, Martin Smith has covered the world from revolutions in Central America and the fall of communism in Russia to the rise of Al-Qaeda and the war in Iraq and Wall Street. Smith produced the award-winning trilogy for Frontline, In Search of Al-Qaeda, Return of the Taliban, and Obama's War. And he also made several business films for Frontline, including Heat, about business and climate change, The Madoff Affair, and the landmark economy miniseries, Money, Power, and Wall Street. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about North Korea's latest threat to let off an even bigger nuclear test.